107 WMKT 1340 WMBN and TV 12 till 8:30. It's 20 minutes past the hour right now. And joining us from the Mackinac Center is David Littman. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
You're the senior economist for the Mackinac Center. Is ATA, is that AirTram? No, they're not. It's a different company, isn't it?
I do think it's different. I know AirTran had to change its name. I mean, that's the new name from an airline that existed some dozen years ago.
And I noticed that they have a big A on their tail, where AirTram has the ATA on their tail. And AirTram filing for bankruptcy this morning and canceling all their flights. So
yeah, and we know Aloha has gone. So yeah, I think that's a general trend of consolidation. This is brought on mostly by the relatively high soaring fuel prices. They can't accommodate that with given traffic and incomes now that are slowing down.
And, of course, that's going to take a while to weed out. The oil, big oil, was in front of Congress, and that, of course, goes absolutely nowhere in Washington, at least right now.
This is a very sick Congress we have, and it's been this way for a while. Can you imagine an industrialized, preeminent economy not willing to drill for its own massive reserves of oil and natural gas? If a country doesn't want its own energy, low-cost, competitive energy, it won't long be a preeminent economy. I'll tell you very frankly, I'm shocked as an economist to see Congress and policies taken over, state level as well as national, by people who don't want the U.S. to grow, who no longer want this to be a premier, progressive, wealth-accumulating economy. And if we don't want it, by God, there are others who do. And we'll want to get where we were 80 years ago. You can see it in the Gulf with China, even Cuba, drilling where we refused to drill.
Well, what's amazing on that, just throwing something out to you, is that even though the environmentalist movement doesn't seem to want us to do it, you have people like the Chinese and other nations that are drilling offshore anyway, just in the international waters.
And that's just the beginning. One would say, well, okay, if the environmental wackos, the radicals, don't want us to have any carbon-type fuels, then why not go full tilt on what we're good at, nuclear power generation? The French, 80% of their electricity is produced through nuclear. Sweden, it's closer to 90%. In this country, it's about 20%. We have the capacity to generate as much or more than they do. Again, nuclear is the most safe, the most economical, 3 cents per kilowatt hour, would make this U.S. economy a real powerhouse to the rest of the hemisphere and to the world.
David, when we're talking about this, too, I remember many, many years ago, somebody who was in the stock market world and was saying that when and if the price went back up, he wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of the wells, even here in Michigan, the oil wells, they were capped many years ago because the cost of getting the oil to market here in Michigan had become more than what the cost of the barrel would cost. Now, it would seem to me that in this day and age, all these wells that have been capped could be uncapped, and we would have a fair extent of oil right here in our state and elsewhere. That would at least they'd be able to make money at it now with the price of oil.
Oh, you're so right. This is the most propitious time for, in terms of price and profitability and job creation, to have that industry. But you know what? Lansing took it off the table. Both Democrats and Republicans said that we could not legally drill for oil, what we called slant or now called horizontal drilling. Now, mind you, there has never been an accident, and there's therefore no insurance rating whatsoever because there's nothing to rate. It's that safe, and yet we can't do it.
And it seems like David, that it's such a small minority.
Yes, it is, but it's a very well funded, and that's what buys your politicians, as we're finding out more and more. That's what in so many cases, especially today, if you look at the national Congress, the Senate, and the House, you see so many of these legislators that have been bought off by the very well-funded Sierra Clubs and all the, again, those who wish to so-called hug a tree. They don't really want to do that either, but they do want the U.S. to drop from a leadership role to a very second or tertiary role in the competition among nations. I find that terribly unacceptable, very dangerous politically, economically, and militarily.
Because it just leads us down a road that we may never be able to move back from. I want to talk about the economy of Michigan coming up. We're going to have to break for news here in just a little bit. And you've already stated that the Congress, and I'm assuming you're referring to there in Washington, but I think you probably have the same feelings about our legislature in Lansing.
Yes, I do. You can't tax your way to prosperity, and that's what the Senate and the House are doing, and the governor, of course, is so eager to ratify that. The reason she always finds the Michigan budget pantry empty is because their legislative budget is up 7%. Their general fund budget this year is up 8%. Now, I ask you, who in the private sector, outside of government, is getting that kind of increase in their income? But they again, are controlled by those who sit in the galleries watching to see who can get away with it. Are the taxpayers watching what they're doing? So all this tax increase, 22% on businesses, that's really good for the business climate, you know, and 12% on incomes of most productive people here, that just goes to, seed the further campaigns, re-election campaigns of these people who don't want growth. They want the public sector to grow, the private sector to shrink, and that's precisely what's happening. Population in the state is declining, absolutely. The incomes now are declining. We will, in 2 years, be below Alabama in per capita personal income, which is the best measure of economic and material well-being of a population. The unemployment rate is the highest in the nation, and we are disgraced, both politically, by what's happening in places like Detroit and our senators in Washington, as well as those who are in the state capital.
David, we need to take a quick break for news. We also have to get caught up on the Wall Street Journal talking about where our economy is at, where we're headed, and are we even headed in the right road? The story we just did on the newscasts about the job fairs in Gaylord and Sheboygan, which have both lost a bunch of jobs because of closing of manufacturers. Mansalona is going to lose 300 jobs because a company that's been there forever, associated with the auto industry, is going to close up and move out. It seems like, David, that we're losing, Michigan is, losing on many different levels. The auto industry is going, the American auto industry is going down the tubes in Michigan, perhaps because they didn't invest in the infrastructure of their factories 30, 40, 50 years ago, maybe because they didn't think they had to, but maybe because Michigan didn't give them any breaks or whatever.
Well, that's not it. No, that's not it at all. What's happened here in Michigan, and you can tell by contrasting it with Kentucky, with Tennessee, Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, the auto industry is doing absolutely superbly. We came through 2004, 5, 6 with the most phenomenal auto sales and profitability that the auto industry has ever seen. Obviously, Detroit's industry didn't participate. One,
right.
Our costs are so far out of line. It's
right.
Highly unionized. There's no voluntary unionism here. But all those right-to-work states, that is where it's voluntary to pay dues or to belong to a union, have expanded so tremendously in their auto and auto supplier employment as to make us look very sick. And to the extent we don't focus on that particular facet, we will continue to see the state of Michigan slide. I want you to know that this is the ninth consecutive year that the Michigan's income has been below the national average. So it's not just a recession. It's a trend, and it's a downward spiral until we do two things. In my estimation, we have to have voluntary unionism, and secondly, we have to remove the income tax because we were a preeminent state attracting workers, labor, and capital up until 1967 when we passed an income tax. There are nine other states that do not have income taxes on payrolls. And there are 22 other right-to-work states, and they're eating our lunch.
Okay, let's deal with these kind of one at a time. Which one to start with? All right, right-to-work. Some would say it's going to be a really cold day in Hades that that's ever going to happen because they are
so... It's not exactly getting warmer here in Michigan, is it?
Because they're so entrenched right now with the Democratic Party, which tends to hold control in the state of Michigan because of the amount of money that they, you know, fork over. So the question becomes is how do we become a right to work state? I mean, can we put it on the ballot and vote for it?
Yes, and that'll probably be the way it occurs. When will it happen? Well, when people are hurting enough and see clearly they can't any longer the truth can't any longer be hidden from them. They'll figure it out. Otherwise, of course, we'll see a continuation of people voting with their feet to these other states where the jobs are. And that goes not just for the workers in the auto factories and the suppliers, but all the ancillary industries that go with it. But most of all, unfortunately, when we spend these billions of dollars that the governor wants to spend on education, all you're doing is educating the cream of the crop to leave the state to find jobs. So it's an export of our capital, our human capital, which is the most important resource economically of all.
But now you're not saying we shouldn't educate our people.
No, but if there aren't any jobs, you have to realize that all those dollars are actually just helping other states.
Okay. And I know she made a big deal about we educate so many teachers and then the teachers leave the state.
But it's not just the teachers. It's the most important part. It's the youth, the next generation.
Oh, yeah.
That could be your entrepreneurs and your venture capitalists. They don't believe in capitalism in Lansing, I'll tell you that. Very, very frankly, all it is a redistribution that keeps getting bigger. Do you realize that this is the third pay increase they've given themselves, not just the legislators, but the bureaucrats, within 12 months? Now, I want to know, again, compare it to the private, productive, innovative, entrepreneurial private sector, the ones that really make things go. The number one principle in public finance is that any tax system works as long as government spending isn't growing faster than the private sector that can finance it. And Michigan has turned that upside down, put the cart before the horse for the last half decade.
You know, you keep mentioning that all the workers in Lansing all got an increase in their salary, and we were talking with another member of your group there, and I've talked to a couple of Republican representatives as well, and it seems like Lansing government, those five blocks downtown, are the only place in the state of Michigan where we haven't lost any jobs.
Well, that's right. Including the teachers, the total number of government employees continues to grow compared to the private sector. That's just a burden because government, its function is a redistribution of income. It doesn't create a darn thing. It could, but it doesn't. And what the Mackinac Center has outlined for the people of the state and for the policymakers as well are $2 billion in cuts that would make the state more efficient, more effective, and return power back to the people and to the local governments. Lansing is out of control, has been, and until the people's attention turns to where the source of their pain is emanating, there'll be no restitution of preeminence to the economy of Michigan. That just makes sense. Meanwhile, the other states, I suppose, it's kind of schadenfreude, and, you know, they kind of cheer us on because they know that their gain is our loss.
In simple terms, you mentioned the fact that the state has only had an income tax for, what, 30 years or so? The question is...
40 years.
40 years. How did we do it before, and what happens if you suddenly pull that out and...
Well,
you force
people to do the right thing. The focus must be on spending. we have so much wasteful spending. Let me give you an example, because we're in dire competition with states like Alabama now, not just in the auto and auto supplier industry, aerospace, defense, every industry you can imagine. And they did a study at the sister institution down there and showed that if the private sector, you know, the productive sector's
right.
income and compensation were used as the benchmark, and the public officials, and Michigan's public officials are paid 29% more in total compensation
right.
in the private sector, if
right.
you can believe that. But if ours were just returned to the level of the private sector, if they were forced to toe the line on average, we could be saving $500 million every year, which would accumulate in terms of the potential. So that's just one small element of what the Mackinac Center has researched as well. And they from everything, the competitive bidding for the 552 public school districts of this state in terms of the food services, the custodial, the transportation, the health care, there's another $500 million. So you're up to $1 billion just with two elements, making it a prevailing wage where you don't have to pay union wages for a competitive job on a public facility. That, too, would save upwards of $300 to $400 million a year if the state were advancing the way it should.
Well, David, we had a firm that was over by between Gaylord and Charlevoix, kind of near Elmira, if you will, on M32.
Yes, I know it.
Okay, and they ran an operation to provide food stuff to schools around the state of Michigan on a contract basis, and the state managed to pretty much just run them out of business so they could get back control of it.
That's a very interesting story. Thank you for that. It becomes a nightmare. Things will have to change. Otherwise, we'll see this as a death, as a graveyard spiral in terms of the death of Michigan's economy. Let me tell you why it's so important and urgent for this to change quickly. In just a few years, you'll see the retirement of the baby boomers.
Yes.
Or at least partial retirement. I don't think they can afford to retire many of them anymore. And when they do that, they're going to follow their kids, follow their way to places where they can live more effectively, without in states where there's no income tax. And it's not just in the South. There are places in the West and the North too that have no income tax. So they'll be saving themselves gobs of money. Is that really what we want? Do we want to wait until these people who have the most experience, the most wealth accumulated, leave the state? Then you won't get your volunteerism here either. What are you left with at that point?
Not much.
You mentioned earlier that we're up to almost 600,000 in food assistance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what kind of a burden is that? That's just redistribution. You're not creating a darn thing. This isn't the Michigan any of us grew to respect, nor will the rest of the world.
So, crystal ball in front of you. You've mentioned all sorts of things. In the short term, what can Michigan do in the next 365 days to change everything around?
The most important thing, I've come to believe, is to reduce spending. That's the thing that will get attention of other states and investors worldwide. We need the infusion of capital. And nobody wants to come to a state where they know that because the state's spending, wasteful most of it, is exceeding our ability to cover it, that we're going into debt. So no one's going to want to come here to be fodder for more tax increases. So if you can't get spending under control, there's no hope. In any case, but the second most important thing is to float that petition, and we'll see it, for right to work. Half the companies out there won't even look at a state if it doesn't have right to work legislation. So that's going to be extraordinarily important to wake people up and say Michigan is open for business.
That has to be one of the many reasons that we haven't received, like, the new Toyota plant or the new Nissan plant.
Yeah, I was a little close to that. I was kind of personally involved in watching that, and I heard what the Toyota people really said, and it isn't what got put in the media. I can assure you it was very harsh, and it had nothing to do with, well, we have other plans or something. They know exactly why, and so do the legislators, but they feel that the people paying for the re-election they've been captured by And so they're catering to the unions rather than to the general population of the state of Michigan or its progeny.
Okay, so we need to get the right to work.
First, you have to control spending. Public spending is growing much faster than the ability of the citizenry to afford it. That's clear. That's why the taxes keep going up. And it's being done by, see, they're all connected. It's being done by the urgency of the unions. And unfortunately, the governor just is a sycophant for these kinds of pressures. And until we become competitive and say, no, there are other people in the state besides organized labor, we want voluntary unions. If people want to join, that's fine. That's good. If they do, fine, voluntarily. But why should they be forced to? And everybody's looking at that. When Michigan changes that kind of mandate and becomes choice and voluntary-oriented, that's when everybody will notice that Michigan truly is reforming.
David Lippman, thank you for joining us this morning.